Yes.
Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to this fourth webinar from Dwayne Carpenter on Awakening the Higher Mind and the Intuition. We're still trying to figure out the system. This is a new format, this Zoom webinars. So please forgive us as we muddle our way through. We haven't figured out yet how to put the names on there so that you all can see who's all with us. So let me just go through and say hi really quick. I'm not going to unmute any of you, but I just want to say hi real quick and let everybody know that Yvonne is here, Asha, James, Joe, Julia, Karen, Leah, Lori, Michael, Nellie, Orest, Risa, Rose, and Tia. Now, you all should have the ability to raise your hand, and when you do, we will unmute you so you can ask Dwayne questions. He usually goes through his presentation and pauses regularly to see if anybody has any questions. So, like I said, this is kind of a new format to us, so please bear with us as we learn how to use it too, okay? So, over to you, Dwayne.
Thank you, BL. I would like to extend my appreciation to the Moya School for the opportunity to bring these presentations to a wider audience. I would also like to thank UBL and Rose for your technical assistance that is making this available. Now, this session, we're going to recapitulate some of the earlier material so that any new people can sort of come up to steam or speed, and it'll be an easier transition.
Okay. So one second here as we get this going here. Okay, so now you're just click on that.
Okay, excellent. So last session, and this makes it full.
No, they already see it full.
Okay. Last session, we went over the seven divine rays that HPB and Jewal Kool outline in their masterworks, and it's important because all of the forces that we work with, all the lighted substance, is one or other of those seven rays. And as we outlined in our last session, also the seven planes. This image quickly is just the seven rays broken down in a more circular fashion. The two at the very center being the symbol of the fact that we're in a second ray solar system, which is dominated by love wisdom, and it is given the color of indigo blue by the Tibetan and HPB, and hence why we have put this circle of the seven rays set against this indigo blue background. When we study the seven rays, we realize that the seven rays keep stepping themselves down into these lesser septenaries infinitely. And if looking up, They also repeat themselves with greater power as you look up through the different rays and planes coming from systemic and cosmic levels. This is more or less the same image. We reviewed not only the rays, but the master's ashrams. And we have to keep in mind that all of the rays are used by all of the masters for their divine work, but there's usually certain predominant rays that they will utilize. Another image of the seven rays and the seven sub-rays being repeated through all of the seven rays going from the physical, astral, mental, and up, right up through the upper triad to the one monadic life and the logoic plane. Again, another image of the seven rays. And one of the goals of this work is to present the seven rays as qualities of light and as moving energies. And after a certain amount of foundational text, quotations by the Tibetan, and a little bit of commentary on my part, we like to show the seven rays as they perhaps exist on the inner planes with their unique coloring. And also the quality of motion must be added. Here again, the rays in the planes that we presented in our last segment, the rays in the planes seen as they begin to go under the influence of rotary motion. The seven rays, or the seven planes, under the influence of very high speed rotary motion, which, if you look at the very center, you can see where the vortex begins to emerge. Something that rotates can go infinitely around in a circle until it's stimulated by a greater life, and then as the speed increases, the invocation of these lesser lives for the greater creates a bridge between the two, which is that center point or vortex. The rays in the planes sort of laid out. And we talked about polarity and the importance of electricity, the understanding of electricity and the laws that govern it on an occult level as we move into the age of Aquarius. Okay. Now, in this section, we're going to review the rays in the planes in relationship to motion and the vortex. This is an image that shows the chakras, which we're all familiar with. If you go online, go to YouTube or Google Image, you will see literally thousands of images that depict the chakras. But this one, I think, is, even if the colors are incorrect, very powerful, because it shows that the centers are really vortices, and that these vortices extend out through the etheric body, the astral, the mental, and all the other sheaths, and that this is how they're connected. There has to be an element of infusion or integration, and it's a course done through Motion, and it's done through the through rotary and cyclic spiral motion that we're going to talk about more extensively. Now, in the last presentation, we talked about the rays and the planes, and how when two or more forces interact, they come on into each other's vicinity, they begin to turn upon themselves, much like a weather system does, and it creates rotary motion. In other words, one of the first questions asked is, where does motion come from? Well, we can say that the unmanifested, the divine will, through Fohat, sends an impulse or a stream down through these lower levels. And these lower levels, which are more or less in a static state, become galvanized into activity. And the first type of motion is rotary motion. And we may have shown this image last session, but it's worth repeating because it shows visually how the chakra system is created, how the vortex is created. And I would like participants to look at this not simply through the lower mind, but as a meditation. Really allow this image to impress itself upon you, and we'll discuss it in a minute. On my desktop.
Oh, wait, I got it.
Thank you.
The music was a little bit loud, and so we could barely hear you, Duane, when you were trying to explain what was happening here in the beginning.
Okay, thank you.
And we have several comments now, too, so.
Excellent. Well, we'll stop at this point and take questions or comments.
Okay, let's see. Orest says, besides Newton and Goethe color theories, there's new ideas introduced magnetism to color and the actual motion of longitudinal waves. These influence the actuality of the colors, and the art of Clay Taylor explains these ideas. Here, let me unmute Orest so he can elaborate.
Thank you.
Can you speak now, Orest? You're mute. Okay, there. Now you should be okay. Well, I can't unmute you. Can you unmute yourself?
Unmute.
There you go. You're good.
Right. What you have provided is a visual artistic impression, a simulation, a stimulation of a potential. There is a possibility of seeing the actuality, and this actuality is part of the one plasma field which is alive and moving, and the constructive force is magnetism. But as magnetism moves, it's correlated with both sound and with color, and the actual colors suggested by the work of Clay Taylor and the work of John Depew, and also some of the work, I think, of Bedini. So we can actually see this happening if we can view magnetism from a color field point of view. And I think this is possible.
Excellent. Wonderful comment. Thank you. I think the key idea is going from potential to actuality. And images of this type, I think, are helping people build a bridge between potential and actuality. But this is only a very rudimentary beginning. We hope Rose and I and Justin and a few others to be able to take some of these same images we're sharing through this program into more of a holographic, more of a fourth dimensional view. And of course, one really has to penetrate even deeper than any visual image, however profound or multidimensional, into the actual experience itself. And my experience has been, Orest, that second-ray types, if presented with the right symbols, because this is what we're dealing with here, we're dealing with a symbolic type of language. And the lower mind, however necessary and useful, can really only allude to those more subjective experiences that awaken the higher mind in the intuition. But I've made some notes on what you've just said, Orest, and I will do a little research on this John and the Taylor gentleman. I'm familiar with Newton's works and Goethe's on color, but I'm always open to expand more understanding. So thank you very much for that comment.
We have several other comments about that they couldn't hear you over the music. Is it possible maybe to redo, to show the video again and then re-say what you were saying about it without the music?
What I was sharing, I don't think is important enough to redo the whole thing. I just simply pointed out that one of the key questions in the Ageless Wisdom teachings that many students make is, where does motion come from? DK says that everything is energy, and that's the final revelation, that all is energy, to quote the master. And but where does it come from? And when you look at images of this particular nature, you begin to understand a lot about the ageless wisdom that is only alluded to. And the chakra system is absolutely key, because the whole purpose of occult alignment, visualization, and invocation is to create a bridge between the microcosm in the macrocosm. And what is the microcosm? Well, it's humanity in the lower kingdoms. And what is the macrocosm? Well, it's the soul, it's the upper triad, the one monadic life, the purpose of Sanat Kumara, and then right on and up through our solar logos to other realms. And it's all done through the law of correspondence and the linking of these septenary sevens, and we're going to explore that very shortly in more detail. So that is basically what I wanted to say. And when you watch this image, you'll see that there's an attempt by two different energies or rotating forces to neutralize each other. And you only have the creation of a form when those two fall into synchronization. One cannot cancel out the other, because if the greater could cancel out the lesser, then there wouldn't be any lesser, there'd just be the greater. And the lesser cannot cancel out the greater, because it doesn't have the potency, it doesn't have the light capacity. So what you're seeing here, to go back to our discussions last session, is you're seeing a point of tension. The vortex is energies held in a point of tension, and that tension can move great distances. Yeah, because every sphere has two vortices, one entering and one exiting. And this is how they communicate amongst themselves, or as they say in quantum physics, when they're talking about atomic and subatomic particles, this is how they nest. This is how energies nest, one within the other, each having its own autonomy, yet because of this semi-permeable membrane on these atomic and subatomic levels, they're able to move with each other. They're able to be a part of one greater organism that we call the soul or the personality. Any additional comments?
Yes.
This is a very powerful image.
It is, and the thing I think that's so powerful is when you show it, and it actually does create those petals. I mean, that's just amazing. Anyway, you do have a couple of more comments here. Asha says, or she asks, is there a link or a YouTube link that they can get so that they can see the visual with the music regularly? She says, personally, I want to move away from mental concepts and analysis and focus on the experiential possibility of awakening. I would be very grateful if there is some link or website that I can watch and listen to this frequently. I was thinking about this visual and have the Lisa Gerard music downloaded on my phone.
Well, we have all of these as a recording that can be retrieved at Makara, the Moria site for all the symbols and the different presentations by not only myself, but many other fine contributors. So it's all there, and there's three other ones. So I hope that will be some help. And if you go to my Lightweaver site, a lot of what you're seeing here is extracted from different commentaries, animations, and symbols that are, when you open up Lightweaver site on the right hand, light-weaver.com, and when you open it up on the right hand side, you'll see commentaries. There's four or five commentaries, and they are full of animations. If you like these, there are many, many more, in even higher resolution, we're just in the infancy of trying to bring some kind of sophistication to these Moya presentations, and I'm speaking, of course, for myself, to the best of our ability, and it's not easy. We just make a little bit of improvement every time we do it, and so thank you for that comment, because that's sort of why we're doing this. Any additional?
Yes. Share? Arrest says the two forces are held by a neutral force, that is the rod of the caduceus, which both hold together and keeps apart.
Yes. I like the language that Orest uses. And if you really pay attention to every word he says, it's not only scientific, it's very poetic. It's organic. And I can't say that I fully understand many of Orest's statements, but what I do, I am very, very impressed with. You have to have, there has to be a galvanizing force around which these different Davic forces can rotate. And that is what is called the Bindu point, the Laya point, the point of pure abstraction, which is the will of the Father. For purposes that may not be well known, some great entity has decided to manifest on a certain level different forces. And all of these forces will conform to some degree or another to the seven planes or the seven rays. The rays being the second aspect of divinity, the planes being the third, and the center point, that black hole, that point of abstraction in what we've just seen, exists in the center of every atom, in the center of every rotating vortex, whether it's the different bodies or the soul on its own plane. We call it the will, the sacrifice petals when they're opened. But it's a place where all form ceases to exist. And when you follow that back, you see that it's an expression of the monadic will, which is an expression of the will of our Father, Sanat Kumara, and also the solar logos and right out of our entire system altogether. So that's good. Thank you. Any additional comments?
No, that's all I see.
Okay, excellent. And it's important to take time to answer questions or to take comments, because it makes it more into a group dynamic, a give and take. And my job is merely to get the thinking going and to present a few symbols that can be interpreted more abstractly. Okay. I don't know if I presented this image in my last presentation, but it's actually not an original of mine. And many of these images are not originals of mine. And you know, you see them floating through the net, but you don't really know whose they are. So I don't claim any originality here, but it's very well done. It shows the three primary rays, first, second, and third logos, rays 1, 2, and 3, their respective colors, and the type of motion that they activate. And starting on the furthest right, you have circular motion, which expresses the third aspect of divinity, active intelligence. And as we said earlier, and we will repeat with great regularity, only when something that's in circular motion reaches a certain speed can it go radiatory, combustible, or fourth dimensional. These are all sort of truncated quotes from the Tibetan. And what happens is, from the circular motion, it indicates some entity has reached its apex of development, and it jumps exponentially into spiral cyclic motion, which is an expression of the second ray or the soul. And then, of course, when you have fully developed the love wisdom aspect, later on you will have that flash of the dynamic will, which is indicated as progressive motion in the far left red box, rectangular box, but in a sense, it's actually no motion at all. We can say it's the straight line from here to there. That's the shortest distance between two points. But that is actually a misnomer and incorrect. The point of pure abstraction of the will is a place of pure stillness or peace where it's prior to manifestation. It's prior to some great entity breathing out and creating all these different bodies and sheaths and rays that we study. Okay, if there aren't any additional comments, we'll move along.
No, I don't see anything.
Okay. I try to avoid quotes, but it's impossible. You can study this material your whole entire life and think you know it well, but all you got to do is read one short passage by the Tibetan or HPB or Rorich in the Agni Yoga series, and it just humbles you instantly because they can summarize powerfully, beautifully, poetically so much of what we're studying and trying to understand. Anyway, back to the Law of Supplementary 7, and this is from Rule 8 for disciples and initiates. And the Tibetan quotes, "The lesser seven, the greater seven, and the planetary seven form one great whole, and these the group must know. When this is realized in the Law of the Supplementary Seven is understood, let the group understand the three and then the one. This they can do with the united breath and the united rhythm." A book could be written on this one quote, but I would simply point out that in the next image, you have sort of in one picture that concept. You have the solar logos with the higher seven, which of course are the seven heavenly men. And we know what those are, and I don't have to repeat them. If we follow right around the seven rays, they are the sacred heavenly men that sort of are the centers of the solar logos. The next level, stepping down on the law of septenary sevens, is the seven ashrams of the masters. And if you take those large numerals and you look a little further out to the outer periphery, you'll see that there is a series of lesser numbers, and around them are seven even lesser groups. So you have the seven heavenly men expressing through the seven masters ashrams, and then the seven masters ashrams are stepped down and to seven sub ashrams. And you'll see that at the very top where it says seven subgroups under the numeral seven, the large numeral seven towards the top. If you've ever wondered why, you can think to yourself, I'm a part of, say, a second ray ashram or a first ray ashram or a fourth ray ashram, but I'm still considerably different from my group brothers and sisters. And why is that if we're all in the same ashramic group? Well, we can point out that we're probably all at slightly different places on the path. But to me, even more importantly, which group do we really belong to? Let's take the seven subgroups at the top. It can be a 7-1, which is the great seventh ray of harmony and rhythm, but expressed through power. Contrast that with a seventh ray subgroup ashram connection with ray 2. So you have harmony and you have rhythm now combined with love wisdom. And you can go down through all those seven to get a sense of the diversity. And then even these groups can be further broken down and broken down and broken down. But I want you to look at it as a composite. that all of these septenary sevens, through the law of correspondence, which according to DK is infallible if it's presented occultly. In other words, DK further states, the law of analogy is similar, but it indicates similarities. He says the law of correspondence is exact if it's occultly pursued or linked or understood. Now, here's the same image. And the quote is from Treatise on Cosmic Fire 770, and I apologize for not having all of the quotes up here. But in Cosmic Fire, he says, these multitudes of egoic groups form a radiant interlocking whole. Now, what I've done here is I've sort of eliminated a lot of the text, all of the numbers, and in Adobe Photoshop, I've sort of fused and blended them enough so that you can see how they do create one interlocking circle. The seven heavenly men, they are not independent entities often as we think astrologically. Yes, they do have their own autonomy. Yes, they do work in certain ways, but they are also connected with the other heavenly men, and that's how the plan is unstoppable and cannot be diverted, because you have all these light-bearing heavenly men, these planetary, sacred, esoteric planetary lives, all working in unison. And we know from our teachings that these seven heavenly men comprise the seven chakra systems of the solar logos, and our Earth planet occupying the base of the spine. Well, that may seem like a very humble position, which it is, comparing it to other higher entities, but if you look at it from another point of view, it's only at the third initiation that you really begin to understand the base of the spine center. So our solar logos is using our Earth as a major center, base of the spine, to undergo his initiatory experience. And that's also why we have so much sexual license taking place at this time historically, because this seventh ray, which really comes from Draco down through the sun and then impacts the Earth powerfully. And it affords opportunity for those who realize that human sexuality is a powerful force that needs to be guided. It doesn't need to be forced out of one's expression. It doesn't need to be hindered. One should not be celibate, and does not need to be celibate to undergo the initiatory experience. But these are the powerful energies pouring in, and it's a mosaic. All of you are familiar with the magnificent genius of Michael Robbins and his work with the seven rays and his wonderful two-volume book, The Tapestry of the Gods. I always like to say that in a very simplified form, this is a visual example of the idea of the gods being woven into what HPB would call a weave, tapestry of the gods. Okay, any questions up to this point or comments?
Yes, Arrest says, Indian Rajas or Regas or Regs impulse the sequential rhythm of the nada lines or meridians.
Yes.
Musically, the harmonics of the higher seven likewise energize all life.
Yes. We have in every living organism an etheric body of some type, however primitive and embryonic. And part of the etheric body is, as it interfaces with the physical, you have these currents, these nadi tubes. Actually, that's what the Tibetan calls them. And the technical term of a nadi is tubular vessel. And what they do is they allow these cosmic forces from higher levels coming down to seat and ground themselves in our nervous system, our glandular system, throughout the whole physical body. It's what gives it its uprightness, to quote the Tibetan. And without that, we would be way back in our evolution. So the nadi are very important to study and to understand. Any other comments or questions?
Nope, that's it for right now.
Okay. This is one of my favorite quotes. And again, I apologize for not having the source. It is simple, but it is from DK's teachings. It is simple to grasp the information and the intellectual data regarding the centers of force. It is most difficult to bring about the rearrangement of the forces flowing through these vortices and to learn to function consciously through the higher centers, subordinating the lower ones. And we're going to discuss this in greater detail in a few minutes. And this is why images, visual images, are so important, because we have to understand these ideas of forces as more than just abstract concepts we read off of a book. We have to sense that they have their unique life and they have their unique signatures, especially when you get into color, sound, geometry, heat, magnetism. The interplay between the centers below and above the diaphragm is of vital importance to the modern aspirant, for the mechanism of their transmutation results in the activated heart, the throat, and to the eye, and lead to true esoteric endeavor and to creative work on the subtler planes. The Tibetan has affirmed in HPB consistently that we are going to have a new scientific Aquarian dynamic of energy and force that puts it on par with conventional science. In fact, I might be so bold to say that when you really study what's taking place in progressive scientific circles, they are breaking through into these higher etheric subplanes, and they are making incredible discoveries that will not hit the mainstream until a few years, or maybe 5 or 10, but they will literally revolutionize man's perception of himself and his recognition that he is a spiritual entity. And this is not just New Age pink fluff. This is conventional science that is now crossing over into the study of Fohar in its lower forms, prana, the nadi, the whole organism on every level is electrical. Okay, so studying the vortices, this is perhaps one of my favorite images that I've expanded on and used for other purposes. You will note that this comes out of Rays and Initiations by DK. And I think it may have been the last book that was published. And I find it of interest that the initiations, the different levels of development that Alice Bailey has outlined here, are done as vortices, as funnels. This, to my understanding, is the only place where this is done with such detailed accuracy. And what could we have expected if Alice Bailey was an amazing artist or an amazing engineer? And I say this with no sense of criticism, because she went way beyond anybody's understanding of sacrifice and service to do her work. But this is what we need. We need this material to be assimilated by other traditions other than what we've had in the past. The occultists and the esotericists of the past have to meet the demands of humanity in the future, and they have to bridge and step down without distorting the original impulse, and that of course is the paradox in the test, and make it available in new and creative ways. To the right of these vortices are something that I added, and that is simply when you study mantra and nada yoga, which are two additional sciences that the Tibetan talks about but doesn't go in too extensively, because I think at the time that he was working with his students, they really needed to know more of the elementary and preliminaries. And some of this work with sound could have been premature or could have been even dangerous. But now that, you know, we're talking many, many, almost a century later, there are people demanding more understanding and more information around the white magic implications of sound, voicing words, enunciating certain vowels or certain Sanskrit terms that are very, very potent. Okay, good. Any questions or comments up to this point?
No, I don't see anything at this time.
We just saw a picture from rays in the initiations that showed clearly three vortices. And to be depicted accurately, you really should see the upper vortex moving up as shown in the last image, but the lower one in reversed or inverted, pointing down. Because as we're going to explore, there are really two main lines of energy or vortices that create everything in our system, all of the planes, all of the rays, all of the bodies, the chakras. And this image here, given by DK, depicts that when he says that the secret of the fire lies the second letter of the sacred word. I've clipped some of the lettering here. The mystery of life is concealed within the heart. When the lower point vibrates, when the sacred triangle glows, when the point, the middle, center, and the apex connect and circulate the fire, when these threefold apex likewise burns, then the two triangles, the greater and the lesser, merge into one flame which burneth up the whole. Let's just take this image and analyze it a little more. A is the father aspect. It's considered the father vortex because it's the emanating source. And then you have the mother, which is the receptive pole, the negative to the positive. And out of the fusion of the upper and the lower triangles, which are really two vortices, you have the birth of the sun, or the Christ principle, which is the middle principle. And that is depicted by the U in the center of the radiant fire. And it symbolizes the midway point, which we have talked quite a few times about balance and equilibrium. Well, it's relative. And what I'd like to demonstrate, hopefully a little later in this presentation, is how that this midway point, this place of balance, keeps changing as you undergo initiation. Tension, crises, emergence. And when you emerge through an initiation, you have reached a place of great peace and tranquility and integration, But it's only a question of time before that becomes the foundation for a new invocation, a new alignment in which the previous light will have to be dominated by a new light. And so when we look at this image, we have to realize, just as the love, the soul, the consciousness, the Christ aspect symbolized here by the U in the five, in the six-pointed star, it the M, the mother, has to submit to the son. And in time, the son will submit to the Father in heaven, which is the will. But it's a perfect fusion and balance when you have the two come together. It symbolizes also, if you can see my cursor, I'm operating two monitors here. Yes, here we go. This would be considered the point. If you can see my cursor on the very bottom, that would be considered like the etheric, physical etheric body of the personality. This would be like the astral body, and this would be the lower mental body. And these three principles have to be integrated, infused, so that the personality ray is strong enough and radiant enough and invocative enough to get the attention of the solar angel, who in turn will pour down this liberating light. And when the personality ray and the soul ray with their unique coloring and notes fuses, now you have the integrated personality, the integrated soul and personality that will make the same alignment up into the upper triad in the one monadic life symbolized by the A, but really it's Atma, Buddhi, and abstract intelligence, if you follow my cursor. So this is symbolically the lower triad of the personality, the triad of the solar angel, and then the upper triad. And when these higher triangle or vortex and the lower triangle and vortex fully fuse, the soul goes back to its original place in the heart of the sun. And the intermediary, the sacrificing intermediary, is no longer needed. And that's where you have this total fusion and the soul body fades out. Okay, now we're going to look at the same thing, only in a little more detail. And I apologize for going into some of these rather structured sort of lower mind outlines. But it's good because it shows us that when we are impressed by a powerful symbol like the one we just demonstrated, there are reasons for it, and that there are techniques and disciplines and meditations that allow us to speed this process up. Always remember that the occult path is a forcing path, and what we're doing here in our spiritual development, everyone out on any street in America or the world is also doing. They're just doing it at a different speed. So looking at this again, notice that we have the soul in between the upper and lower triangles, but it's done in half tones because it's fading out. And this happens, begins at the third initiation and probably culminates at the fourth. And then what happens is, following my cursor, once again, and repetition is very important here because these concepts are sometimes new in visual form. The Tibetan talks about these extensively, but I don't know too many people who've taken the time to actually render them as tabulations and charts. Okay. What I'm about to say, I said, I think, in our first presentation, but it's worth repeating because of its potency. The monad has three outposts: Atma, Buddhi, Manas. The personality is a vague and distant expression of that monadic life. And it exists down here on the so-called personality level. But what is interesting is, if you can imagine these three arrows or black lines is like elastics. I know this is a pretty far out analogy, but I'm going to make it anyway. And that the lower personality, the three higher notes of the one monadic life have extensions in the personality world. In other words, there are these hidden connections that we don't see, but they're very tenuous. They're like what the Tibetan describes as when you begin to build the Antahkarana bridge. The Antahkarana bridge is no thicker than hair on your head, but these bridges do exist. These Antahkarana bridges do exist. They're very, very thin, nebulous. So what happens is, we find that when the soul body disappears, that these three lower aspects of the personality with their unique color and note fuse with these three upper qualities of the one monadic life. And what is the purpose of this? Let's reverse the process. The monad appropriates an intermediary, which is the soul. The soul on its own plane sounds its own note, and it listens attentively within itself to what it's lacking. And then, by listening, it creates the three lower instruments and the personality ray. Now, why does the soul do that? Because the soul itself is not perfect on its own plane. That's a fairly profound statement, because often we think of the soul as being perfect. If you compare it to the monad, it is not perfect. It is an intermediary to perfection, which is the monad. And then other people will argue even the monad is not perfect if you want to talk about the cosmic planes. So the soul was borrowed. It's an intermediary. It goes back to its evolution. It's made its sacrifice. The lower personality with its three notes and colors fuses perfectly with the upper monadic. And once again, just to regress back, so this is, again, I've just given you the lower mental aspect of what you're looking at. And don't feel you have to understand all the technicalities to be impressed by some of these powerful, subtle, and more abstract energies. Okay, any questions or comments up to this point?
Arrest says it's the lower reflection that you're talking about.
Yes.
And that's the only one.
Okay, excellent. Now we're going to have a quote, and now we're moving into some animations. You've been very patient, and I appreciate your attention with some really abstract minutiae. Okay, one of the fundamental concepts which is grasped by all magical workers is that both will and desire are force emanations. They differ in quality and vibration, but are essentially currents of energy, one forming an initial vortex or center of activity, being centrifugal, and the other being centripetal. And the main factor in the accretion of matter into a form around the central vortex. Okay, this is a description of what we've just outlined and shown in great detail, that you have two major vortices. One is desire, the other is will. And even the solar angel itself, expressing love, is the vortex. They differ only in quality and vibration. They are essentially currents of energy. This quote here gives great meaning to the earlier one that I showed you on the rays and the planes and how they create the petals. And it's one of the main factors, to the end of the quote here, in the accretion of matter into a form around the central vortex. We think of, I want to dissolve form. I want to move into the formless. But looking from above down, to really understand how to do that, you have to understand the descending arc of this whole program and see that some entity wanted to create, have matter around its central vortex. And so to reverse that, we have to understand what was its plan. Is its plan fulfilled? Because if it's not, it's going to be almost impossible to go back up Jacob's ladder, up through the different vortices to find the original impulse, because we haven't either trained ourselves or learned some lesson or burnt out the right karma or whatever to warrant that privilege. Okay, here's another one of our images, and we probably show this, but I want to show it consistently throughout all my presentations because it's so powerful. And if everybody wants to take a deep breath, I want you to just assimilate this organically. I want you to simulate this as a living fusion of the upper vortex and the lower vortex in motion. The united breath of the group. Now, as you watch this dual blue vortex, I want you to note the outward and inward motion that the Tibetan just mentioned, the quote we just shared. But at the same time, it's not just in and out, it's also up and down. And yet, having said that, it's many other things that really can only be understood by a better graphic image that's more fourth dimensional. And of course, the direct intuitive perception that we are integrated, organic, whole entities. And you'll see, I don't know if you can see my cursor, I'm going to bring it over. Here is the expansion down below here. Here's the expansion. Here's the contraction. And then if you look over here, it's also, it's in the figure of an eight. The dual vortex is in the figure of an eight. And there are multiple reasons for that. And we're going to explore a little bit about that shortly. Now, what I'm going to do is, are there any comments around this?
Yes, actually, there's a couple of them. One, Asha wants to know the difference between centripetal and centrifugal, please.
Well, centrifugal, if I am correct, is more outward, and centripetal is pulling in. One is going out, one is pulling in.
Okay. And the second one is, Risa wants to know, what is the beautiful music?
That is Lisa Gerrard, and it's taken from the Gladiator movie, and it's called We Are Now Free. And I have deliberately chosen that music for several reasons. One is that Lisa Gerrard is known for creating what she called the language of God. And I could have accompanying music that is incredibly beautiful. But I have found, as a general rule, people have a tendency to classify it. Oh, that's New Age, that's classical. So what I've done is I've tried to take something people are not too familiar with, and it's more mantric. There's certain sacred syllables that she puts into her works, and she's a natural psychic of the very highest order. And I think it goes well with the images because it tries to prevent the lower mind from its normalizing its ability and need to categorize. Okay, excellent. Any additional comments?
Yes, Frida says that she notices the two triangles in this image.
Yes, absolutely. And you will not have triangles without vortices, and you will not have vortices without triangles. In fact, some of the more obscure passages by the Tibetan and Cosmic Fire talk about down through the throat of the vortex comes a triangle of force. And yet, a triangle may be just another vortex in its infancy being created within another vortex. And this is why the work with triangles, in my opinion, has other levels to explore. And it's not just as simple as passing energy around three points. It's passing energy around three points where it becomes rotary motion, and it becomes so invocative because those three units, whether they're people or spiritual entities, they fuse. And when you consider that a triangle, like a vortex, has different parts of it on different levels. In other words, a triangle can have one point in the will, another point on the love aspect or consciousness, and in the third point of the triangle can be in humanity or down here in matter. And why is a triangle so powerful? Because it's linking multiple levels simultaneously. And that, of course, is what a vortex does. The only thing with a vortex is it's more seamless, and it's a little bit more into the intuitive or abstract realms. Any additional comments or questions?
Yeah. Asha has a follow-up. She says, if will is centripetal and desire is centrifugal.
I would say that that's a good question. And I guess it depends on which direction you're looking. And it's a question of time and space. And these symbols sort of are meant to be taken out of time and space. But I will say this, when the Tibetan talks about rotation in energy, he does say in esoteric astrology that we go around the wheel clockwise in a mundane way. And when we fall under the influence of the soul or esoteric astrology, we begin to rotate in another direction, which is counterclockwise. So clockwise is mundane, counterclockwise is esoteric. But The final analysis, in my opinion, is that you have to take both of those and bring them together and realize that the energy is moving up and down, in and out, and that only when you get a hint of the fourth dimensional do you realize that all these qualifications sort of pale into a more holistic experience. It's like the rays and the planes we outlined earlier, more in the last session than this session, where you have the rays going east, the rays going north to south and the planes going east to west. That's a direct quote by the Tibetan, but he does qualify that by saying there are no directions in space. So I'm sorry if I can't answer that question fully, but that's okay. Any additional comments or questions?
Brisa says, many ETs we see look like this dual blue vortex. Oh yeah, the eyes, I see it now. I'm never going to unsee that.
Excellent. Well, the eye is an important organ because it receives light and it projects light. And the eye, the vortex, has an eye. You know, like in weather systems, the eye of the hurricane? Well, we're going to explore that. One more video, one more animation. And now this one is not quite as multidimensional, but it will show you, it helps train the lower mind and the higher mind, and it helps invoke the intuition because it's showing you motion in two directions at the same time. So just take a deep breath and sort of excellent. So I'm going to take my cursor and I want you to try to follow it. It's an interesting image because, first of all, something is coming out of what appears nothing if you go right to the center hub. And keep in mind the discussion we had on the phrase welling up in our previous Federation presentation. Energy doesn't miraculously come out of nowhere, it wells up from another dimension. And if you follow the spiral bands from the center, and you can say, if you look at it one way, they're going clockwise, but if you look in another way, the other bands are going counterclockwise. And if I follow this band that's going clockwise right out to the outer periphery, notice how when it gets up top here, top left, it just sort of merges with the energy bands going in the opposite direction. But again, this isn't some kind of magic. This is simply an attempt to show how energy is just going into another level. And that's, again, the importance of understanding the eight, the Vesica Pisces.
Okay, you have a hand up.
Okay.
Asha, go ahead, please. Oh, wait a minute. I'm trying to unmute you and I don't think I can. Can you unmute yourself? There you go.
Actually, my question was earlier, and this most recent image has made me ponder and get a bit more confused, but it's really got me thinking. When you have the very first point of creation, you said it comes from another energy level. So where would the, you know, from the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth. So I'm just thinking the first force would be centripetal, would be will, and then desire would be centrifugal, would be secondary to the first.
That makes sense. Yeah, excellent observation. Thank you. Okay, so now we're going to move into the study of eights. Again, pointing out that the dual vortex is really in the configuration of a lemonscape or an eight. And this is what the Tibetan says about eight. The emphasis laid upon the dominance of the Christ principle by Christianity has laid a sure foundation for the work to be done. This truth is curiously substantiated in a study of the number eight in connection with the centers, which we are told is the number of the Christ. And he goes on to explain that all the centers are variations of four or eight, and four being half of eight. And then, I'm going to skip around a little to save some time. In the number eight is the basic symbol of all the centers, for the petals are really in the form like a number of superimposed eights. Remember the images, the animated images that we've shown, that the idea of superimposed eights. The word petal is purely pictorial. And a center is formed on this pattern. First a circle, O, then two circles touching each other, and then making, therefore, an eight. Then, as the petals increase in number, it is simply a growth of these double circles superimposed at different angles one upon another until we arrive at the thousand-petal lotus in the head. I find that very profound, that the symbol of the eight or the two circles joined can symbolize all of the chakras in their different levels. And that ultimately, when they're all completely expressed and shared, that they symbolize the thousand-petal lotus in the heart. Now, here's an image that sort of symbolizes that. It's something that folds back upon itself. In other words, you can't really take the figure eight as a linear construction. You have to see it on multiple levels. Now, here's a depiction of another eight, and to show you how powerful it is, and remember the words, the quote DK gave back when we were looking at the AUM. He said that the U is the middle principle, it's the Christ, and the higher and the lower must be fused. And the Buddhic plane is the central point for that work because it's the fourth ray. It mediates between the upper three, the upper triad, and the lower three, the material planes. And there's a quote from Cosmic Fire. And even though we don't study the permanent atoms per se, because they're more of the third aspect of divinity, they make a wonderful door or entry point to the light and the life behind it. And that's why this particular image has predominantly the color gold and yellow, which is the great fourth ray. It's the ray of Budai, and it symbolizes the groups of devas that work and that you need to master and integrate with at the fourth initiation. Okay, now here's another symbol of the dual vortex or the double circle, the eight, only they're slightly separated. And what fuses them together, if you look carefully, you'll see a lighted line that goes from the center. If you can imagine, this upper golden vortex is the soul, and the lower one, which is just like a shadow, it's like a reflection, but it's still nevertheless connected by this sutratma, this thread, and it has its light right down here. So as this personality down here, which is a dim reflection of the soul, becomes more luminous, it reflects the qualities of the soul, and eventually the distinction between the integrated soul-infused personality and the soul on its own plane, the distinctions are so little that the personality, highly integrated personality, can now fuse. And then once again, to repeat what we said earlier, then the soul-infused personality, which is now like one entity, can make its mark march towards the one monadic life. Okay, now, if you follow these eights in multiple dimensions or multiple overlays, what do you end up with? You end up with a Vesica Pisces, the flower of life, probably the most profound and replicated symbol in all temple walls and religious institutions all over the world, irrespective of what nationality or their historical significance. So what the Tibetan outlined about the figure eights, now we're seeing as a composite. And now we're going to do a video that shows this in motion. And then we're going to have a little time for comments and questions at the very end. This is perfect timing. Excellent. See if you can bring it back, Rose, to the original figure eight.
What is it still?
But that's all right. Just keep it from moving. Yeah. Excellent. Maybe. I would be lost without Rose's professional participation, or should I say, over stewardship. Okay, it looks like we're not going to be able to capture it.
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
Okay.
Just keep talking.
The ability to see the figure eight in motion explains many, many questions about the hidden spiritual path that we're all treading, about the chakras and the centers. It helps bring to light many paradoxes, many inconsistencies, and that the lower mind just may never fully understand, because it's really more of an experience rather than something that you can relegate to just a few trite and simple remarks. But good. So are there any comments or questions at this point on this rotating eight?
Let me see. Asha says, reminds her of the Sufi dervish dances. And
yes.
And that Lisa's music causes movement too.
Excellent.
I don't see any other Nothing new, no hands up or anything.
6 minutes. We got 6 minutes, so I'm going to show one more video. It's a very short one, and it's called An Exploding Fractal. And before Rose actually sets it into motion, I want to go back just to comments that we've made on the idea of welling up. Where does energy come from? And it's too easy to say that energy magically appears. It doesn't magically appear. It comes from another dimension. It, to quote the Tibetan and HPB, it wells up. And welling up is not an easy concept for the lower mind to grasp. So I have this exploding fractal. And what's unique about this exploding fractal is that it sort of follows the law of septenary sevens. In other words, you have an image that's sort of exploding out of itself. You can actually show that picture without actually...
You can't.
That's, well, there you go. That's good. And you will see that as this image sort of comes out of itself, it duplicates itself with lesser offsprings. In other words, like a fractal, it keeps duplicating itself over and over and over. And yet, having said that, it has a life. It has an outbreath, and then it has a contraction. It has an outbreath, then it has a contraction. So what you're going to see, and you're going to see it in a few short seconds, so we'll have to do it a number of times so that you can really catch it. Okay, we're ready to hold your breath. Now, isn't that a fascinating image? It's very organic. Imagine some greater entity wants to express itself on a lower level, and so it unfolds out of itself through the great outbreath, all these different levels. And these levels, in turn, have their offsprings. And to go back to the law of septenary seven, and this goes on infinitely as you look up into the heavens and see that all these stellar entities and these star systems. And when you look down in the other direction into matter, into atomic and subatomic particles, that God is consistently duplicating itself in miniature throughout all of its creation. And we are the bridge between the lower kingdoms and the higher kingdoms, and we share in this organic cellular explosion of light, because that's what initiation is. It's not a lot of fancy talk and a lot of minutia. It's a welling up and an explosion from a hidden well. Okay, good. Any comments on this image?
I don't see any so far. We're all speechless.
Well, it's a powerful image, and I think that the ageless wisdom teachings can never be new because it just is. However, the ageless wisdom teachings, in concluding our presentation here, has to be revitalized. It has to show its marvelous impact, its import, and the rays have to be seen in as many new and creative ways as we possibly can. And even then, if we're accurate in some of our presentations, you're only touching the outer garments of a great being that lie ahead of us for exploration. So there's not any additional comments or questions.
Yes. Okay. Hold on just 1 second. Karen.
Am I?
Okay. Yeah, we can. Yes, you are. We can hear you now.
Great. I just want to say thank you for these beautiful, beautiful diagrams and charts and pictures. They're incredible and very, very helpful. I don't even know what more to say, but how much they really make help with the study of the words.
Well, thank you so much. And I enjoyed spending time with you and the group at the USR conference. It was just delightful.
Well, this is wonderful. And I think this, you know, we're right now, we have this group at my house that are studying this we're looking at the sacred geometry of webinars of Francis Donald. And I'm thinking, wow, this will be our next one to explore. I think this should be shared with many people.
Thank you. His work is amazing. And I also agree. Okay. Any additional comments?
Yeah, there are. First, I'd like to say some. Yes, your way of presenting it, you know, we can read it in the book till we're blue in the face, but it's only when you bring it alive for us like this, both you and Francis, in the way that you present it to us, that you do make it so, so alive. And let me see. So, more comments. Asha says, thank you for an awesome and inspiring presentation. And Risa says, a breath of fresh air into the ageless wisdom teaching.
Thank you. That's so cute. Thank you, Risa. And I appreciate your fine contributions and many, many deep posts of wisdom and occult astrology and information. Thank you.
Well, I don't see anything else, so...
Okay, we're only a minute over. I would just simply say that as all of us come together, even if it's a small group, it's an intimate group. And we are linking telepathically, and the link will become stronger. And this is how groups move forward in their spiritual work. It's not just the lone study. It's working within groups and uniting the breath, the will, the purpose, the plan. And even though some of you may not have made any comments, you have come here and you have taken your valuable time to share with us, and we appreciate it, and we'll look forward to spending additional time later. We love you, and if there aren't any additional comments, we'll sign off.
Good night, and thank you very much.
Bye-bye.